You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 115 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I'm joined this evening by Hannah and we have a fascinating story to tell. Welcome to the podcast, Hannah.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here and share my stories. Thank you.
It's a fascinating one, and obviously I'll let you tell it and get into it, but it's a story I think people will really possibly can't even believe. It's that incredible, I guess. Incredible might be the word, but yeah, I guess it's up to you kind of where you want to start from, but over to you.
Thank you. Yeah, so I feel like I have some notes because I wanted to try and keep everything in chronological order because I feel like I can get all over the place really easily. But I'm 24. I have always, since I was young, I always had these like chronic stomach issues from the time I was young. I think my earliest memory was maybe age 4. And I mean, up and like from newborn to age 4, I don't really have any memories. But talking to my parents, they said I was pretty normal. I was born in a birthing center, so I wasn't born in a hospital. So they didn't have nurses and doctors coming to check on me and be like, did she pee? Did she poop? Like all that. So I was born at 3 p.m. in the birthing center and my parents were home by 6 p.m. So they were like, yeah, she's good. Good to go. So I went home and my mom said the midwife came maybe a couple days later and was like, how's she doing? Like, how's she looking? How are you feeling? All that. So I actually did pass stool as a newborn. I don't know how much, but I think I'll get into this later, but I think that's why my doctors were like, definitely can't be Hirschsprung's. Like, you passed the stool when you were a baby. Like, that's one of the major things they look for. So I think since I did pass the stool, they were like, okay, she's good. So I don't know. Growing up, I always had like chronic pain and like just this constant bloating and fatigue. I was always tired. I was very active as a kid, but I remember like coming home from school and saying, I need to take a nap. I'm exhausted. And my mom's like, you're 7. Like, why are you so tired? And I have a memory of coming home from school and my stomach was hurting really, really badly. And I was leaned over the couch and I was kind of like rocking back and forth like a laboring mom. And my mom delivers babies and she's like, you look like you're like a laboring mom. And my doctors were saying like, maybe that's her way of trying to like get things moving because I was so like constipated and I had so much backed up in there that like that movement kind of helped me like be able to pass a little bit of stool. But from a young age, like I was on laxatives, I was taking Miralax like twice a day. My doctors were like, I don't know, like it's definitely not Hirschsprung's. Like that was ruled out when I was a kid. I had a workup done at Children's Hospital. I think I was about 8 years old and they did some testing. I don't really remember what it was, but I think they did like 2 procedures and they were like, it's definitely not Hirschsprung's. And they were at Children's Hospital, so I think kind of specialized in that. I'm not too sure. But they were like, it's not that. So let's just keep her on like the same laxative regimen. And nothing was working. I remember like I would just always, it would be coming out the other end. Like I would be sick, like throwing up, but it wasn't working down there. So as a kid, obviously I don't want to be drinking that stuff. I don't want to be taking pills at like 9 years old. So I would hide the pills. I would pretend to drink my medicine. And my parents and I had a really kind of interesting relationship growing up because They were like, we want to help you and we want to make you feel better. But I was like, the medicine's not working and like no one's listening. So I went to the same pediatrician until I was like 18. And then I started seeing a new doctor at a new hospital. And I got a GI specialist, I think when I was like 19 or 20. And same testing, like, let's do a colonoscopy and endoscopy, like all of these things. And they were like, the findings are normal. Like they'd show me the report and be like, everything's normal and it's not this, it's not that. So I think it was really frustrating, especially as I got older, because I was like, obviously, if I could have this not happen, I would want that. Like, I don't want to be in chronic pain. I'll try all these medications. But I think constantly doing that was just doing like more damage to my body in the end, because I was like taking all of these medications and none of it was working. So it was kind of just this cycle that I was stuck in. And when I was about 20, I was out with my friends and I had to go to the bathroom, but I couldn't pee, I couldn't urinate. So I was really worried because I was like, this is really weird. Like, obviously, I'm constipated all the time. Like, I can't like pass any stool, but I was like, why can't I pee? That's really weird. So I was like sitting there for 10 minutes. Nothing was coming out. I was so in pain. I like my belly was really distended. I was super uncomfortable. I went home, ended up going to the ER, and they gave me a catheter and drained out like 2 liters of urine. So I think within the span of maybe like 6 hours, I accumulated that much and then it wasn't coming out. So they were super worried, but they ended up sending me home with the catheter in. I came back a couple days later, had it removed. And I mean, it's in ER. So I told them about like my chronic constipation and they did an ultrasound and they were like, we can see that all of this stool is really compacted and it's kind of weighing on your like other organs, and that's why you weren't able to pee. So that was really scary. That was the first time that that happened to me. And I think it was kind of a realization of like, this is getting really bad and affecting me in a way that had never affected me before. So that happened again, like 6 months later, and then like a couple months later, and I was in the urgent care and emergency room a lot for not being able to urinate. So I ended up switching insurance when I was about almost 22, I think. And I saw a new GI doctor and then she was like, I'm out of options. I don't know what to do. Like, we've done all the testing. We've done like all the medications. Like, we don't know what it is. And she kind of just like sent me on my merry way. And I was crying to my mom and I'm like, this is so frustrating. Like, I became such an advocate for myself, but I feel like, I don't know, I felt like I wasn't being heard and kind of just like, okay, like, you'll figure it out. Like, it's nothing like too serious, even though I feel like it was really serious. So one thing I will like jump back to, since I was a kid, I was chronically constipated and I had something called enteroparesis, which is like the leaking around the stool in the colon. So as a kid and growing up as like a teenager and stuff, experiencing that and always having like anxiety when it came to like the bathroom or like anything like that, like I feel like my childhood was really different because I wasn't going to sleepovers, I wasn't going to the pool, I wasn't like, I didn't like going to the beach, I was really embarrassed. And I think it kind of goes back to like my parents and I's relationship where they were like, why are you doing this? And I'm like, I'm a teenager. Like, if I could help it, of course I would. It's like so embarrassing and really hard. So that was like my main concern, especially growing up in my 20s. I was like, I can't be living like this. Like, my quality of life was just awful. So when I met with the GI doctor, I was explaining to her all of my concerns. I was like, I honestly will try anything that I haven't tried already. And she was just like, I don't know what else to do. So I met with a colorectal surgeon and it was my first time ever meeting with one. So I didn't really know what to expect. I knew a surgery was probably in my future. I just didn't know what kind. And met with him. He did like just a normal like workup exam. And he's like, okay, obviously they've ruled out XYZ. Let's talk about the other options. And the first thing he brought up to me was the ostomy bag. And he's like, you know, if you've tried everything up to this point, nothing's worked. Like, I could do this for you. Like, it's worked for like a lot of my other patients that experience symptoms similar to yours. And I was crying. And I think I was crying because I was nervous, of course, but I think it was like a relief that maybe something could finally work for me. So that was in May of 2024. And my surgery was scheduled for October. He was super busy and backed up with the surgeries and everything like that. So he was like, if you can get through these next couple months, which, you know, living my whole life and having to go a couple more months wasn't a huge deal. But yeah, that time came. I went to the hospital. They admitted me like a couple days prior. They had me try and drink Golightly. They had me try and drink a bunch of, you know, laxative, max citrate, all those fun things, and nothing was working. So he's like, okay, we tried it. That was the last time we'll ever do that. And then I had my ostomy surgery on October 10th of 2024. And yeah, so it's been over a year now, but it's crazy. I feel like that I never thought that that would be the thing that fixed me, but I woke up and obviously looking at that bag on my stomach was really hard. I feel like I never thought it would have come to something like that, but I'm very grateful. And I've been living the last like year and couple months pain free for the most part. I've only been to the doctor like a couple times since then for like checkups and everything, but the bloating and the fatigue and nausea and all that is gone. I'm not on any medications. I can live a pretty normal life now. So it's really crazy just thinking about where I came from and where I am now and how long it took, of course. But yeah, my colorectal surgeon was the one that diagnosed me with Hirschsprung's. And yeah, so I think it was relieving to get an answer and kind of like, this is what's wrong. And, you know, like, even though it took us up until this point, this is what you have and this is how we can help you. And there, yeah, I still don't know how I made it this far. He doesn't really know either. But yeah, I guess that's kind of all of it in a nutshell. But I've been living really, really, like, my quality of life has improved a lot since getting my ostomy. So super grateful for that. But yeah.
Wow. I mean,
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
That sounds like an enormous amount to go through for, well, over 20 years. And I think one important part you made at the start was that you passed the meconium, which I know and you know as well is something where, you know, a symptom of Hirschsprung's is obviously not passing the meconium, but I think it's also really important to note that it's not the be-all, end-all of Hirschsprung's. Right. Because you passed the meconium, I passed meconium as well. So it's not, it's, you can do that and still have Hirschsprung's. So when was, because you mentioned the Hirschsprung's was constantly ruled out throughout your childhood. It's like, well, you can't have it, you can't have it, you can't have it. When was sort of the first time it was brought up and then kind of dismissed? Was that really early on or was it just sort of constant throughout?
I would say it was kind of early on. I think I was at the doctor all the time as a young kid and like a toddler and growing up and stuff. But my earliest memory of like age 7 or 8 when I went to Children's Hospital and I had that whole workup done there. And they did a bunch of testing. I think that was the first time since, you know, probably like my doctor in the very beginning when I was just born said, no, it's not Hirschsprung's. We heard it again at Children's and they were like, it can't be Hirschsprung's. Like if she passed the stool as a baby and, you know, she's going, like she's passing stool still, like it can't be Hirschsprung's. But I was, even as a kid, only pooping like once every week maybe, or like every, as I got older, it got really bad. I think I was going like once every almost 2 weeks and it was painful and not fun.
Oh, doesn't sound like a lot of fun at all.
Yeah.
No, that's, and obviously you know, and I know that you are a huge advocate for, you know, speak up and ostomies and for if something doesn't feel right, then saying that it doesn't feel right. Yeah. And obviously from a young age, you knew that, so that something wasn't right. You know, you're only going once every week and a half, 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know that something's not right. That must be so frustrating to then be told by different specialists that, you know, it's, oh, well, you know, there's nothing we can do. Was there a point of view that thought, well, is this just me? Is this just like how my life is going to be forever?
Yeah, 100%. I think I got to a time in my life where I think I was like a teenager. I was probably in like middle school and I was like, okay, obviously if this were happening when I was a kid, I would have probably been better by now. It probably would have just fixed itself, or if something was seriously wrong, I would have been told so. And I kind of just was like, is it in my head? Like, am I making it worse? Like, am I doing this on purpose? And that was, again, a huge thing with my parents. They were like, you're a teenager, like, get it together. We potty trained you or tried to potty train you, and obviously it didn't work. And I don't blame them. I think it's really hard with Hirschsprung's, I think, too, because, but really just any like illness, I don't really know, but like I think it was really hard. There was a lot of back and forth of like, okay, if you can fix this, like fix it, you can walk to the bathroom, you can go and not have accidents and not leak in like your underwear and all this stuff. But I feel like I was constantly like, no, like it's something more, something that's out of my control. And I was told to try a number of things, like change your diet, try like maybe it's stress, maybe it's anxiety. I was even in therapy from a really young age and they thought that could fix it, but obviously it was something way deeper than that.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's, I come back to that word again, frustration. That's got to be, when you know that something is physically the matter, that you know that something is physically not right, but you're being told it's an emotional issue, it's a mental issue, it's this, that, the other. I can't, and it's almost, I don't know whether gaslighting is the right word.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly, yep. Is the right word. It is the right word. But it being told constantly that you're the one that's wrong, and you know in your heart of hearts that it's not. And I just, to have to go through, you know, not just childhood, but all of that. And I understand where people are coming from when they say, well, if it was Hirschsprung's, it would have been sorted. But you are a prime case where people can be diagnosed late on. It has happened, you know, several times. I've heard of people who've been diagnosed in their late teens, early 20s. And we were talking a little bit off air that I find incredible how you got through that time. You know, was there anything that you did that kind of alleviated any of the chronic pain, or anything that you did that, you know, you had sort of good days and bad days, or was it just every day was just bad day?
I would say I did have days that were a little easier and where it didn't seem as bad. I think the prime time in my life where I kind of felt it getting better and kind of had that hope that maybe this is going to be fixed was around high school. So I was like 15 to maybe like 17 or 18. I was super active. I was dancing. I was on the cheer team in high school. And I think being super active and always moving around kind of helped my body kind of be able to alleviate some of that like constipation, because I was like moving so much. I was drinking a lot of water. I was eating semi-healthy, I don't know, but I think I was, along with the medications that weren't working, I think the combination of being healthy and active, it kind of helped my body move things along a little bit. But for the most part, I mean, I have a lot of bad days, but I think it just became like that was my normal. Like I woke up every morning with a stomach ache. I'd cry to my mom and be like, please don't send me to school today. And like, I just don't feel good. And I think it just, I became accustomed to living like that. And it was kind of like, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable because that was my normal. So it was just, every day was just this constant cycle of discomfort and pain. And I think I kind of just was like, okay, if I'm going to have a stomach ache, I'm going to like eat this ice cream, even though my stomach's already hurting. Like it's going to hurt anyway. It's going to hurt when I wake up. Like it was just this, like this constant thing.
So, well, it's hurting anyway. I might as well just do whatever. It's not going to make it. It's interesting when you say your sort of, you know, new normal was just being in pain the whole time. I mean, that's awful. You know, it's this idea that, oh, well, I'm just going to be in pain all the time. And that's sort of on that sliding scale of, you know, if you had your normal day, it'd be everybody else's really bad day. But to you, it's just a normal day. And a good day is when you're probably not in no pain, but just in less pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is just, it's just absolutely awful. But I guess, what was it like being sort of finally listened to?
It was, I find it hard to like find the words, because I feel like saying I'm grateful and like saying it changed my life is such an understatement. I feel like this doctor, I like sat down with him and my mom came with me to the appointment, and he just sat there and like hit record on his phone and was like, I'm going to record all of this just so I have it and I can go transcribe it into my notes and so I don't miss anything. And I was like, yeah, totally good. Like, I don't know. Like, I felt like, I was like, okay, he's actually going to listen to everything I say. And like, there will be like a written thing or printed out thing with everything I've said. And I think it was such a relief and I was so excited. I feel like knowing I was getting the ostomy bag was the harder part for me, of course. But I was like, if this is it and this can be like my relief and help me live a more normal life and lead me to be able to do the things I want to do. Like, why would I not do this? So I think, yeah, I was super grateful, super happy, and just I always had like a negative like thought when I thought about like the doctor, the hospital, or anything like that. Like, I'm like, they don't listen. They don't like want to help me. Like, it's so frustrating. And I definitely gave up when I was younger. I feel like I was like, this is just how it's going to be. But I think meeting with that doctor when I did came at the perfect time. And he was just like, I want to help you. I like, this is what I do. This is why I do what I do. So I'm super grateful and very blessed to have met him and his team that helped me.
Absolutely. But that makes perfect sense that your negative thoughts around hospitals, and you know, I think that's the same with a lot of people, especially because it's not a happy place, or certainly wasn't a happy place for many, many, many years. Because, yeah, as you've said, you go to, you know, whether it be children's or whether it be a different hospital, and everyone either says the same thing, or they haven't listened, or they've just kind of been, you know, just, oh, well, take this and, you know, disappear out of my sight type thing. Mm-hmm. So naturally, you're going to turn up to hospital appointments, I presume, going, oh, here we go again. Here's another, or, you know, I'm going to sit here. They're going to tell me a bunch of things that I don't believe. And then I'm going to disappear again. And then I'll be back in a few weeks because my stomach will hurt again.
Yeah.
But it's, so that makes absolute sense that you had, you know, negative thoughts around that, and but so good that you found someone who certainly, you know, looked like he wanted to really help and wanted to, you know, because being in pain the whole time is not normal. You know, it's so
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, and I guess you probably had the same thought, you know, am I going mad here, or am I just, you know, being in pain is not a normal thing. If the body is in pain, the body is telling you something. It's telling you that something somewhere isn't right. Mm-hmm. You know, and in the end, there's going to be something that's going to, you know, fix that, or medication or whatever. So I guess I guess that was kind of a relief that you sort of thought, actually, being in pain all the time isn't normal. I don't have to be with this.
Something was wrong, actually. I knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but it's, no, that's really good that you found someone who kind of listened in the end. And it's, but I want to talk a little bit about the ostomy as well, because I know you're a really, really good advocate.
Yeah.
That's the advocate's the right word. Sorry, I'm struggling with words.
No.
That's... the really, really good advocate for ostomy surgery. And obviously, there are people who have Hirschsprungs and have ostomies, or they have ace Malones, or they have various types of stomas, and there are people who have no stomas, such as the way with Hirschsprungs. It's so different for everybody. But how have you kind of transitioned over the last, say, couple of years or so, since 2024, into having an ostomy? What's that transition been like?
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I feel like really tough. I feel like I only show the really good parts, like on my TikTok and in the videos I make. I try to be very positive because I try and look at life in a very positive way. And I feel like when I was told I was getting my ostomy, I was, again, I think I said this earlier, crying. I was excited, but I was super nervous for what that was going to look like for me. And being like a young woman too, I feel like I had never really heard of like an ostomy or like what that was. And if I did hear of it, I was like, oh, like, I think older people have that. Like, I don't think younger people have that. And I think right before my surgery, I was going on Instagram and TikTok and looking it up, and I was finding people online like Paula, the girl that makes like the bag covers, and then Sarah, she's the model, and I think she lives in Canada. But I loved seeing Max. I was like, wow, like they're young like me and they're like totally rocking it. So I'm like, it can't be like as bad as what I'm thinking it'll be like. So getting my ostomy and waking up that day and looking at it for the first time, I think totally freaked me out. But every day that went by, I think was a little easier. I think it was an adjustment learning how to change it and care for it and make sure I was staying healthy. And then also just like the mental aspect of it, like my body image and, you know, looking in the mirror. And now I like have a bag that's permanently attached to my body. Like I never really see myself without it other than, you know, changing it. And I look in the mirror and it's really hard some days because I'm like, ugh, like there was a time when, but back then I was so sick. So it's like, I don't even want to go back to that because I feel like I've adjusted to this life and living pain-free and having such like a different outlook on life now. I feel like I'm just really grateful. So I think living with an ostomy, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I feel like it truly like saved my life and gave me like brand new lease on life. I don't know. So I think I have bad days, of course, but I think majority of my days are really good days now. And I'm total advocate for it because I think it can really change your life.
Absolutely. No, I think that's brilliant. You mentioned a couple of people there who have ostomies or ostomy bags, but sort of to a lot of their social media in a positive light, which I think is brilliant because I think mm-hmm. it's so easy, especially with chronic illness, to be negative, to say, oh, this hurts and that hurts. And you know, and that's okay to say, you know, to be sort of upfront and honest, like we have been for the last half an hour, and say, look, there are times when things are, you know, when things are yeah. rough. But I do love the way that, you know, you are very positive about it, and it's whether it's a lot more common than it was maybe 10 years ago or so, or whether we just see it more because presumably you're like me, you follow a lot of people with stomach mm-hmm. illnesses and ostomies, and whether we just see it more because of social media, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But there certainly seems to be a lot of people who have stomas of various kinds, mm-hmm. and I think yourself included have become such great advocates and real inspirations for people, because again, it's one of those things. Like anything in life, whether it be a sport or whether it be a medical condition, if you see somebody, you know, people can tell you all you like that this will be like this and this will be like that, but actually if you mm-hmm. see someone like yourself doing really well with an ostomy, I guess that makes a lot more difference than someone telling you.
Totally. Yeah.
But it's...
Yeah, I think... Yeah, I don't know. Seeing it and, like, seeing people post about it, I was like, okay, they're living, like, normal lives. They're going out. They're going to the beach. They're traveling. They're, you know, playing sports. I don't know. So I think it was really nice seeing all that. It kind of gave me, like, peace of mind and made me a little less scared, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, because, again, I can imagine it's, especially if you haven't had, because, again, with Hirschsprung, some people have a stoma and then they might have it reversed, but obviously you weren't diagnosed at the time where everyone else is usually diagnosed. So mm-hmm. So you hadn't had the stoma before, having a stoma then kind of, becomes a huge change in life. But what kind of things, you know, are you able to sort of go out more now and this, that, the other? So how has sort of life changed, I guess, socially?
Yeah, I feel like in the beginning, it took me a couple months to kind of get out and start seeing friends again and doing what I love to do. I used to go line dancing all the time. I still kind of do, but I wasn't going as often back then because I was healing and all that. But getting back into that and hanging out with friends, and, you know, it took me a while to, like, go to the beach for the first time with it, or go swimming with it, or even, like, take a shower with it. Like, I don't know. I feel like there were a lot of things where I was really nervous too, but I was able to, like, tell my friends. And of course, it's kind of an awkward topic because I feel like, you know, you don't really understand unless you're going through it. But I think I have such a great support system that really can, you know, empathize and understand to an extent how it affects me and all that. But my parents have been great. I have two brothers that have been super supportive about it as well. I met my boyfriend maybe like 6 months after my surgery. So meeting him and telling him about it was really nerve-wracking, but he has some knowledge of what it was, and kind of just sharing my story. I think he was super understanding and super supportive about it. So although I was really nervous, I think telling him and telling friends and even family and just describing what it is and how it affects me, I think that was the scariest part. But I did that. I'm able to travel. I went on a cruise. I went on a plane. I've been able to do a lot of stuff. And so I think although it affects me to an extent, I think I can, like, the pros significantly outweigh the cons. And even then with the cons, I'm like, what's so bad about it? Like, I have to change it every, like, couple days, but that's 10 minutes and then I'm good and on my way. So, yeah.
That's brilliant. Well, I guess 10 minutes is a lot better than being 24 hours chronic pain. If you do, yeah. We do the math.
100%.
Yeah. It doesn't sound, you know, it doesn't sound so much of a chore. But yeah, that's brilliant though, that you have such an amazing support network and a support system. And like you said, I guess it is, you know, pretty nerve-wracking when you tell your family members and partners, because you think, you know, will they understand? Will they, you know, will they, you know, get what I'm going through or why I have this or, you know, whatever. But I guess when you tell people, that I guess some people reacted in different ways, but it's so good to hear that they were so supportive. Did they want to kind of know more about it, or was it just kind of, oh, okay, cool, and move on?
Yeah. I think with my parents, my mom's a nurse, like I said earlier, so she delivers babies, so it's different because her specialty is not like GI stuff, but she would help me change it, and my nurse would come and help me do like bag changes in the beginning. And my mom was super involved. Same with my dad. He was like, I think a little freaked out by it at first, understandably so. I mean, I couldn't even look at it, I think, for a couple of weeks. I was so freaked out by it. But yeah, my parents have been great. My brothers are like, you know, like, we don't judge you. It is what it is. Like, you're living such a better life now. So it's like, so happy for you.
No, that's brilliant. And your boyfriend the same, I presume. He just kind of, you know, just yeah, was he sort of the same as everyone else?
No, he's been great. He's super understanding. I think I like talk about it and I'm more like I don't know, like self-conscious of it than he is. Like he's like, it's part of you, but it's not like completely who you are, and like it doesn't change how I feel about you or change, like, you know, it, like, it's just there. And like, I'm so glad it made, like, helped you feel better and, you know, has led us to be able to like do all these things, like travel and do all those fun things. So
that's brilliant. That's amazing. No, that's because he's absolutely right. You know, your quality of life is, you know, I presume 1,000 times better than it was, or certainly as you've described it, 1,000 times better than it was, you know, pre ostomy. And I think you're very much living proof. When people maybe get concerned when they hear the word stoma, or you know, but presumably you were given a choice as to whether you had it or not. And so a lot of people have to make that choice, and they maybe think, oh, if it's, you know, it's permanent and it's going to be like this or like that. But you are living proof that, you know, when people do have a stoma, you know, lives can very much improve tenfold, I guess.
Totally. Yeah. I feel like that's why I'm such a big advocate. And like, I post online and stuff. I think it's really nerve wracking posting, being vulnerable and like showing it and showing like the reality to it. Cause I don't like to just show like, oh, it's perfect all the time. Like, I talk about how it takes like the mental toll on me. And it's, I do have bad days, of course, but I think posting about it has kind of been like an outlet for me. And it's kind of therapeutic in a way. Cause I feel like, you know, it's one thing to like call my mom and be like, oh, like I want to like rant to her about this, but I'm like, I want to post it online and have people be able to see it and know that like there's light at the end of the tunnel. And like, if you do have an ostomy or you're getting an ostomy, like life can be significantly better.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And I love it as well. And you're doing, you're by posting and by, I guess, by doing this as well, you're doing the same thing as the people you looked up to were doing, you know, people like Sarah. So you're sort of carrying that on as well, which I think is amazing. And kudos to you, because I think that's fantastic. And just, I guess my last question really is just kind of the future for you. I know we've talked about a lot medically that's happened in the past, and you have your ostomy now. But I guess what do you sort of hope for the future for you?
I would say, it's hard because I feel like I think about it sometimes, but I'm like, I don't know, like I live in the now, but then I like sit in my bed at night and I'm like, okay, like I am getting older. Like I'm like, what's
getting old? False.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, you know, I'm growing up. So I feel like it's just, I do think about my future a lot, and I do have a temporary ostomy, technically speaking. I have a colostomy. I do still have part of my colon left. I have the opportunity for a reversal in the future if I want it. I feel like I've kind of been given the option whether to just keep my ostomy or try the reversal. If the reversal works, great. If it doesn't, I'll have an ileostomy after that. So I think I think of my life in two different ways. Like, if I have to have an ostomy for the rest of my life, I've already lived the last year with doing so much more than I could have ever thought. So if I do have to live the rest of my life with an ostomy, like, I'll be happy. If I get the chance to have it reversed and I can be healthy without a bag, then that's great. But I feel like, I don't know, I'm in school. I'm hoping to be an ultrasound tech once I finish school. So that's kind of my career future. But I think just living, like, I don't know, day by day, very positive, and just keep sharing my story and hope to, I don't know, inspire people. And just, I think it's important to keep advocating for yourself, especially if you feel like deep down in your gut, like, I don't know, like, just keep advocating and someone will listen to you. I feel like it's easy to lose hope and kind of just take it as it is and be like, I think this is just how I'm going to have to live life. But I think, yeah, just stand up for yourself, and you know your body better than anyone else. So
absolutely. Well, I think I wish you the best with the ultrasound. I think you'll definitely come at it with a lot of experience. Yeah.
Totally.
So I think you'll be absolutely brilliant at that. And if anybody does present with Hirschsprungs, you'll be able to tell them.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And I know you said just finally, you said you do a lot of advocating on social media, on Instagram and TikTok especially. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you on those?
So on my Instagram, it's My Life with Stella with like an extra A at the end. I can post on my TikTok, maybe like the link to that, but my TikTok is the same as well. My Life with Stella with extra A at the end.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
It's been
another amazing story. Incredible story. And I know it goes without saying, but I wish you all the best in terms of your health, your career as well. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.